Transformation of America by Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien. Chapter 11, Papa Philip Habib. My CIA operative, handler, Alex Houston was scheduled to perform with country music entertainer Loretta Lynn at the Playboy Club in Atlantic City, New Jersey in the spring of 1985, and he admittedly did not want me there for the performance. He explained that after his show, he intended to dress up like a character's lunch for the bunnies, and I would only be in his way. But I had White House business to attend with a different land of rabbit. Reagan had arranged for me to meet with his personal attaché, Philip Habib, now deceased, who always played the cryptic role of the Alice in Wonderland white rabbit to mind-controlled slaves. Houston had no choice but to take me along once the orders came down. CIA operative Ken Riley, the neo-Nazi pedophile who functioned in the capacity of Loretta Lynn's road manager and Project Monarch mind control handler, was Alex Houston's closest friend. Riley often made arrangements through Loretta's and Houston's shared talent agent, Reggie McLaughlin, for all of us to travel together, particularly when it involved government covert operations such as this Playboy Club gig did. Loretta's singing career and political ties into CIA covert operations have always been synonymous. Riley escorted her in and out of the White House on numerous occasions during the Reagan administration. By natural attrition, this put Riley in a secondary role as a backup handler for me as he often returned from D.C. with orders for and/or concerning me. Houston and Riley shared much CIA covert operations, country music interests, neo-Nazi and U.S. government mind control, Project Monarch methodologies, slave running one, pornography, cocaine, and pedophile activities. Kelly and Riley's young daughter were often filmed pornographically together, and endured the sexual assaults of Houston and Riley too together on numerous occasions. This trip to Atlantic City provided me an opportunity to talk with Loretta while her husband, Mooney, Riley and Houston met for business. Loretta and I had so much in common that our time together had been restricted from the time we met in Minneapolis, Minnesota in 1981 and discussed our victimizations. 3 While alone in Loretta's dressing room at the Playboy Club, we discussed a wide range of topics from motherhood to the White House. We talked about Reagan in terms of his role as the Wizard of Ounds, but mostly we recited the general praises we were trained to say. We talked about Reagan's favorite music by Air Supply, which he had supplied to us both via Riley. Air Supply's cryptic NASA/Project Monarch theme recordings became life and breath to us both according to Reagan's intention, which locked in our programmed devotion for him. We discussed the recent inauguration party Loretta had attended at the White House. I was aware she had entertained there as Houston relayed information to Riley pertaining to his recent trip to Panama to meet with Panamanian dictator and CIA operative Manuel Noriega in order that Riley deliver the information to Reagan during the inauguration party. Loretta and I switched personalities spontaneously as we inadvertently triggered each other with the shared cryptic language to which we were accustomed. We discussed forbidden subjects including Noriega and Byrd until J. Riley and Houston caught us and separated us as though we were a couple of naughty kids. I learned more than I was supposed to about Loretta while in Atlantic City, but was never permitted another opportunity to speak with her so freely. This trip to Atlantic City was multi-purpose, which was not unusual for government operations in which I was forced to participate. I had a major cocaine transaction involving Noriega to attend at the airport, a message to deliver to Philip Habib pertaining to the Contras, and another programmed in by Habib in answer to Reagan, country music entertainment aspects, and prostitution to Habib according to Reagan's instruction. 4. As the sun was setting over Atlantic City, Houston activated the Project Monarch Ounce programming that was used for high-level covert operations, and had me dress accordingly. I wore real and faux diamonds to signify my presidential model business role, rubies to signify my ounce-programmed prostitution personality, and emeralds to signify my aunt's programmed drug business. This physically indicated to my contact S, which mode of operation I was under at the rhyme. Rarely did I wear all three indicators at once, but they certainly applied in this operation with Habib. Houston led me down the waterfront boardwalk toward the hotel casino where I was to meet Habib, walking like the ounce scarecrow and singing, "Follow the yellow brick road." Houston led me up the elaborate escalators of the hotel to a high-stakes gambling area where Habib was playing cards. The guard at the door did not let Houston through, and I was sent to Habib's table on my own. When I approached, Habib leaned back in his chair to hear while I quietly recited in ounce cryptic, "I've come such a long, long way to see you. Uncle Ronnie sent you something." "What would that be?" he asked loudly as he leered at me and chuckled. I could not respond because I was under heavy program. He handed me his room key and pulled me close as he hypnotically whispered, "Use the key. Put it in the lock. Turn. Open the door. And step through a window in time." The other gamblers at Habib's table were getting impatient, and I quickly exited the gambling room. When I arrived in Habib's room, two of his bodyguards accessed my programming. Chiefly speaking, I began reciting Reagan's message. Arrangements were made for the two guards to pick up a fair-sized shipment of cocaine the next morning that was arriving on a small military brass airplane. Houston and I would then board the plane and fly to DC, where I would complete my part of this operation. When Habib arrived, he ushered me into the bedroomed part of the suite and began disrobing, down to his boxer shorts and gartered socks. Referring to a recent anti-porn film I was used in, he said, "I liked your ruffled tennis panties." Then threw me a pink teddy and ruffled panties resembling the tennis outfit, commanding, "Put it on." I complied. He threw me a stuffed toy cat on the pillows and explained, "That kitten is going to keep this kitten," pointing to me, "from screaming. We're going to play Twiddledee and Twiddledum. S&M games." Habib physically resembled the violent Alice in Wonderland characters, especially in his boxer shorts. The hysterical controlled laughter that rose in my throat would only have intensified his abuse and was, fortunately, choked back by terror as he began attaching heavy rope ties to the four posters of the bed. On command, I crawled onto the bed and lay on my stomach while he tied me so tightly I was stretched. He shoved the stuffed cat under my mouth, then entered me roughly from behind and said, "Come to Papa." The intense pain as he brutally sodomized me was outweighed by a high-voltage stun gun as he jolted me repeatedly to create the perverse jerking movements and rectal muscle constrictions he desired. I soon passed out from the blinding high voltage of his stun gun. It was nearly 3 a.m. when I stumbled out the door with the stuffed cat in my hands, nauseated, disoriented, and in extreme pain. The ghoul ocean breeze helped revive me as Houston marched me back to the Playboy Club. Houston knew I had been programmed with a message for Reagan that I would deliver the next morning in DC. As usual, he began to access it immediately. His quick timing somehow permitted him to penetrate the electricity and program codes, designed to keep the information repressed, and accessed the information. Houston kept written record of any messages he was able to access, along with photos and ledgers, for his personal profit and future blackmailing purposes, should he need to protect himself. In this case, I surmise from Houston's Panama activities, conversations I overheard between him and Riley, and my recollection of the messages he accessed, that his purpose in extracting this information was for his personal profit and backdoor dealings with Noriega. I understood it was these kinds of dealings that eventually contributed to Noriega's downfall with the CIA. Morning arrived before I was allowed to sleep, and I felt exhausted and spacey as I waited by the curb for Habib's bodyguards to pick Houston and me up and take us to the airport. A small military airplane was parked in a restricted fenced-in area as we arrived at the airport. The two bodyguards conducted their business and quickly loaded the trunk with the bundles of cocaine as planned. Houston and I boarded the airplane and flew to Washington, D.C., where I delivered Habib's message to Reagan. The bank transaction numbers later checked out to be a Cayman Island account number. Philip Habib was directly involved in various DIA/CIA operations I was forced to participate in throughout the Reagan/Bush administrations, although Dick Cheney maintained his role as my commander for these operations. Habib directed my actions where international, diplomatic relations were concerned. Cheney orchestrated events from behind his desk, whereas Habib was active in the field as Reagan's attaché. The following operations, documented in their entirety from my experience perspective only, most likely involve other aspects to which I am not privy. In typical DIA/CIA manner, scam, need to know information resulted in their left hand not knowing what the right hand was doing. Nevertheless, the overall criminal purpose of Operation Carrier Pigeon and Operation Shell Game, documented herein, does not change. 1. Riley, over time, owned several slaves. 2. Riley, like my father, Wayne Cox, and other, remains apparently immune from prosecution for his crimes against children and humanity, as it is considered a matter of national security, under the 1984 Reagan Amendment to the National Security Act. 3. I still have the handwritten note from Loretta that prompted out forbidden conversation, and I hope that someday Loretta will gain the peace/peace of mind that comes with rehabilitation. 4. In the course of deprogramming, I found retrieval of this information much quicker than it would have been had Houston not accessed it previously, against government policy, and for his own personal gain.